Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, January 14th, and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
Shane Dawson is back from Kilkenny again, Leslie. That's where he's now residing. Coming up between now and the new music show at Betta de Silva at 7pm, Paul Corry and Mark Langdon preview this evening's Premier League matches and round up all the latest European football news, while Davy Fitzgerald joined us a little later for a detailed chat on what's involved in managing the Antrim Hurlers.
We'll also hear from Leinster coach Jack Nienaber ahead of their Champions Cup clash this weekend and round up today's sports news headlines. If you want to get involved, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
I've never lived in Kilkenny, Ruby. My people hail from there.
Where are your people from, Paul Corry?
Wicklow, yeah, Clandalough.
The Garden County. The Garden County. Ruby, this is the most...
Me, I am from Kildare.
You're the Walshes of Kildare.
My parents are from different places, but I am from Kildare. I am a Kildare man, Shane Dawson.
Sorry, I never said it. I never claimed to be a Kilkenny man. I made it very clear.
You were making yourself very clear. A cat there for when the hurling comes around. You were trying to, you know.
It worked out when I was younger.
I was glad to hear you get a bit of sick essay. You've handed it out to me a few times on this show.
Have you come prepared, Paul Corry? I've come prepared. Anyway, Paul, how are you?
I'm very well. Looking forward to Premier League games tonight.
Good. Yeah, there are four matches this evening. We'll get into all of the Premier League chat and European football roundup with Mark Langdon very shortly. Here from Davy Fitz and Jack Nienaber briefly too as well. But we've news headlines, some of which are surrounding around football. So it's good to have you on board, Paul. A man of many talents, of course. not just a football expert. Tallaght Stadium will host the Republic of Ireland's opening game of the 2025 Women's Nations League when Turkey visit on Friday, February 21st. The girls in green, who remain managerless since the departure of Eileen Gleeson last month, begin their League B Group 2 campaign with a home fixture that kicks off at 7:30 before travelling to take on Slovenia the following Tuesday. Tallaght Stadium, of course, will be familiar territory to the players as it will mark the 34th Women's International to be hosted in the South Dublin County Council-owned venue. Shamrock Rovers have signed Republic of Ireland under-21 international Matt Healy from Belgian second-tier side Royal Franc Boron. The 22-year-old began his professional career with Ipswich Town and spent 18 months with his hometown club Cork City. Matt Healy's people hail from Cork City, Ruby. The 22-year-old midfielder.
I think Matt Healy is from Cork City, listening to your statement there. Do I have to correct you now for the whole of the show?
This is why I love the dynamic of co-hosting the show with you, Ruby. The 22-year-old midfielder scored 4 goals in 29 matches last season and had started 14 of their 15 league games so far in this campaign. Healy made his Ireland under-21 debut in September 2023. Meanwhile, Paul, before I get your reaction, Daniel McDonald of the Irish Independent also reporting that Rovers are discussing personal terms with Dara Burns for a return to the club, but there are no plans for Marcus Poom to return to Tallaght. Firstly, on Matt Healy of Cork. Good signing.
Yeah, very good signing. Obviously knows the league during his loan spells from Ipswich back to Cork, and he's obviously been a really prominent figure in the 21s team over the last couple of years, particularly with Marcus Poom not coming back into the club. They probably did need to bolster the centre of midfield. Richie Toe will be moving away, or has moved away from Tallaght as well. So good addition. Has a really good person and player there in Gary O'Neill to learn from. Probably played the game in similar ways, so seems like a good addition.
And Dara Burns returning to the club as well.
That's an important one. Particularly with Neil Ferrugia gone out the door, if you think about how much of a presence he was on the wing last year. I thought Dara Burns really kicked on, particularly in the second half when he started to maybe understand a little more what Stephen Bradley wants from his wide players, and he's got a lot to give.
Elsewhere, Sean Boyd is set to sign a new long-term contract with league champions Shelburne. The new deal comes after interest in the Shell striker from Scottish side St Mirren. Important to nail down a long-term deal for Sean Boyd, who was integral to Shelburne's league victory last season.
He was probably the most important part, wasn't he, during that run-in when they needed to win games. He was the one who popped up with vital goals. The one thing with Sean is just keeping him fit. He's had, through no luck of his own, just really bad injuries throughout his career, and I guess from his perspective it was a great time to sign a contract. Really good end of year. St Mirren come looking, strike while the iron is hot. I'm sure he's got himself a good deal there, and a good deal for Shelburne as well.
Be battling it out with Meepo Odebeku for the starting slot if Duff continues with one up top. In rugby news, Connacht back row Aina McCarthy has been confirmed as captain for the Ireland under-20s as head coach Neil Doak named a 31-man squad for the upcoming Six Nations Championship. Cork-born McCarthy, who joined Connacht's academy this season, has set to lead his side out in his hometown where they take on England in their opening game on Thursday, January 30th. Doak has included six returning players who were involved in last year's Six Nations campaign. And just briefly, returning to football, Galway United have recruited Republic of Ireland international Niamh Farrelly for the 2025 SSC Electricity Women's Premier Division season. Farrelly spent the second half of last season with Piemont United, the club she made her senior debut with in 2015, aged just 16. Elsewhere, Shamrock Rovers captain Anya O'Gorman has re-signed with the Tallaght-based club, while Rhianna Jarrett is back with Wexford Utes. Good news for Leinster rugby fans, Ruby.
Definitely good news for Ireland as well.
For Ireland rugby fans as well, indeed. Big boost for Leinster and Ireland as Dan Sheehan and James Lowe are stepping up their returns from injury in training this week. Will Connors and Tommy O'Brien are in a similar position. However, Jordan Larmour has been ruled out of Saturday's Champions Cup clash with Bath due to a hamstring injury. Leinster coach Jack Nienaber was speaking to RTE Sports' Michael Corcoran earlier this afternoon.
Jack, I suppose you've had a chance to digest last Sunday and the game and how it finished, and I suppose how it finished, if I can say that, in terms of the defensive effort at the very end. I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with the rest of it, but the last couple of minutes epitomised what you're trying to do and what you want from your squad.
Yeah, yes, I must say, I think that we obviously had to dig in deep. The loss, I think that last passage was over 20 phases, so... I was quite happy with the aggression and the attitude that the players had in that last 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes, and also the work rate. And then obviously you can have all the attitude in the world and the work rate, but you have to marry that with being accurate and not giving a penalty away. So really pleased with that.
And that's something that's kind of hard to do even throughout the course of the game, isn't it, to perform under pressure like that?
Yes, and I think that for me, that was the pleasing thing. If you look at the squad and the team, where they are, there was a lot of pressure in that game, similar to, I would say, a test match pressure. And that's that you expect from a team like La Rochelle, who's a very proud team, and especially with the crowd and the fans there, they don't lose there often. So there was a lot of pressure on us, but. Yeah, that's the growth, I think, in the squad and the team, you know, over the last two seasons.
Have you seen a maturity there this season that comes from spending more time together, training a lot more together?
I'm not sure. I mean, for me, being part of them for just over a year now, yes, obviously the maturity is probably from my side, understanding them a little bit better because they've been together for quite some time. So, yeah, definitely I understand them a little bit better. I think they understand me a little bit better.
It was a huge task. You'll take a lot of confidence. But the good news is that you have still quite a lot of room for improvement, if you understand.
Yeah, no, 100%. I don't think it was a polished performance at all. There were certain aspects of the game, of our game, that was good. But in our review today, we still know there is a lot of room for growth, and there must still be a lot of growth for us if we want to go forward in this competition.
Given the fact that it's a condensed pool stage in terms of the competition, you've played three games, you're in a good position, but nothing is decided yet.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to play for us for this weekend in this competition. And obviously with where we are in terms of the standings and everybody still almost having opportunity to get into the top 16. I think we're in the round of 16. I think we qualified already, but there's a lot of teams that can still make it. So there's a lot to play for, not just for us, but for everyone, yeah.
And your opposite number, Johan van Graan, and the job that he's done at Bath. I mean, he's taken them literally from the bottom of their table to the top of their table.
No, yes, Johan is a quality coach. I've worked with him with the Springboks in 2016 before I came over to Munster, and then obviously coached against him a lot when I was with the Cheetahs and with the Stormers, and what he has achieved in South Africa, and what he's achieved at Munster, and what he's achieved at Bath. I mean, it just speaks volumes for the quality person and coach he is.
Given the fact that there's so much at stake this weekend, the good thing about it is A, it's in your own hands, and B, it's in front of your own fans.
Yeah, it's always nice to play in front of your own fans and to play at the Aviva. And we really get a lot from our fans. We've got phenomenal fans. I mean, if you look at the amount of attendance that we've had over the course of this year, it's remarkable. I mean, the amount of people that turn up and support us and through thick and thin. And so it's just another opportunity for us to try and put out a performance that just in a way of saying thank you for our fans for what they have done for us. So it's an opportunity for us to say thank you to them.
In terms of your squad profile, I mean, it seems to be quite good from an injury point of view at the moment. The possibility of maybe Dan Sheen or James Law or Hugo Keane or people like that being involved this week.
Yes, obviously we had to play without a number of them, but I guess that's always no injuries or injuries are always a bad thing. But the positive is that you get other players some game time, and then when they come back, obviously there's a nice competition and to get back into the squad. So it's nice to have the prospect of that they might be involved, you know, because they're quality players and they've been with us for a while and they experienced test players. So it will be nice if they are available, it will be nice to tap into their experience and their quality.
As Leo Cullen has said to me previously, it's matches this time of the year will decide what happens later in the year. I mean, that's how big the game is this weekend.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot to play for in terms of where you finish. I'm not good at maths, so where you finish in terms of first or second and maybe get a home round of 16 and a home quarter final and home final, a home semi-final. But I mean, that doesn't guarantee victory, but it's nice because it's in front of your home fans. And again, it's a way for us to say thank you for the loyal support that we've got from our fans up to now.
Jacqueline Aber speaking to Michael Corcoran there. Good news for Connacht as well as Leinster. JJ Hanrahan is in line to make his long-awaited return for injury for Connacht in this weekend's Challenge Cup trip to Cardiff, with the province confirming the out-half is available for selection. Hanrahan hasn't played since suffering an ACL injury in April of last year. Connacht head coach Pete Wilkins also confirmed that Ireland internationals Bundiaki and Finlay Beelam are available for selection with no constraints around their load management after they were rested for the opening games in December. More info on all of those stories I mentioned since 6 o'clock on the RT Sport website or the RTE News app.
Game on.
Football.
So the Premier League is back this evening. Chelsea face Bournemouth at 7:30. West Ham and Fulham the same time as to our Brentford and Man City. But at 8 o'clock, it's Nottingham Forest versus Liverpool. Liverpool's only defeat this season, Mark Langdon, has come at the hands of Notts Forest. They now have to go to Nottingham. What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I think it's a really interesting game, Ruby. As you say, Forest got the better of Liverpool Anfield earlier on in the season. I think at that point it was seen as a bit of a fluke result. You know, Forest defended well, scored their goal, and most people probably just expected them to be sort of bottom half of the table, I would have thought, coming into this return fixture. But they find themselves in kind of a, I don't like to say a title race, I think that might be pushing it too far, but they're certainly in with a realistic chance of European football and maybe even Champions League football. I think Nuno done a brilliant job. I think they've benefited Forest from not playing in Europe this season. You know, a lot of teams have suffered with injuries. They've been able to pick virtually the same team for most of the campaign. It's a very settled side. The two centre-halves, Murillo and Milenkovic, have been absolutely outstanding. They get good protection elsewhere, and they're lively on the counter-attack. I would say, I expect Liverpool to win the game, but I think without going too much down the cliche territory, I think the first goal is absolutely massive. Nottingham Forest keep on scoring the first goal. They've got a brilliant record of starting games quickly, and then, of course, they're able to defend and play the way they want to on the counter-attack. It becomes a completely different game if Liverpool score first and then Forest have to try and open up against what is a brilliant Liverpool attack. So, really interesting game. I would I'd probably edge towards Liverpool, but not with the same amount of confidence I might have sort of suggested a month ago.
Paul, are you edging towards Liverpool as well, or are they looking a little bit rattled now?
I wouldn't quite go as far as saying rattled, but certainly the performances against Manchester United and Spurs last week in the League Cup were probably a little bit off the levels that we've seen in recent weeks and recent months. But I would agree with Mark. I'd lean towards Liverpool on this occasion. I mean, they managed to rest a lot of the big players against Accrington on the weekend. Not often do those players get kind of 5, 6, 7 days to really get their legs up, recharge, and I think you'll see them come out of the traps real quickly. If you wrap your mind back to that game in Anfield, Forest sat in very, very deep for a large period of that game, brought on Elanga and brought on Hudson-Odoi, who were really good ball carriers, and exploited a lot of the spaces that Liverpool left when going forward. And it'd be interesting to see. I would imagine one of those players will start today. Can they replicate what they did in Anfield? I think it's going to be a tough ask, Ruby.
Mark Langan, the other side of the coin is, when Forest beat Liverpool, the only other game they managed to win around them was beating Southampton. They were thumped by Newcastle, thumped by Arsenal, thumped by City. You look at the Forest that are playing now. They've won their last five. They've won five of their last 7-0. They're a different team to the team that beat Arsenal. Or beat Liverpool first.
Oh, they are, yeah. I think confidence is... almost can be underrated, can't it, at times, really, because... I think you're seeing now there's just this growing belief that when Forest go out on the pitch, they kind of expect to keep clean sheets and they expect to score goals and win games. And everybody seems to have raised their levels accordingly. Chris Wood has been one of the absolute revelations of the season. He's remarkable, the way that he's been able to sort of carry the threat up front with those pacey wide players that was mentioned earlier. I'd give a shout out to Morgan Gibbs-White as well, because I've spoken there about sort of Forest and hard work, and they're organised and all the kind of horrible things. I think Gibbs-White has just got that bit of quality as well that is, probably could play for a top six side. But I think it's just the confidence and the belief that they've got has just enabled them to really go on and sort of trust in Nuno's methods, because he was heavily criticised when it didn't work out for him at Tottenham. But he'd previously done this, hadn't he, with Wolves. Wolves were... albeit with a different formation, were pretty much the same kind of side, really, as what Forest are. And you could replace Jimenez up front with Chris Wood, and you've got that focal point. And, he took a sort of a championship team in Wolves to Europe and an FA Cup semi-final, and they were sort of consistently able to mix it with the best sides. And he's done that again with Forest. So while the Spurs job wasn't maybe suited to that, he's definitely a very good coach, as he's proven elsewhere.
Elsewhere, Manchester City are in London. Paul, would you like a pointless stat that I read at the weekend to tee up this match for you? Credit to Bill Edgar, the football writer with the Times newspaper. Manchester City are the first English top flight team ever since 1888 to double their goals tally 3 games in a row. December 26 scored 1 against Everton. December 29 scored 2 against Leicester. Journey 4th scored 4 against West Ham. Journey 11 scored 8 against Salford. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be 16-0 this evening, but they have an opportunity here to go 5 matches on the trot with victories as well. They've turned a corner in the new year.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of a revival in the last couple of games. You still do sense that there's a bit of fragility about Man City, and particularly away from home, Shane. I was just looking at the games that they've played of late. Beaten by Tottenham, Bournemouth, Sporting, Brighton, Liverpool, drew with Crystal Palace, beaten by Juventus, beaten by Aston Villa, and of course then won their last away game against Leicester. But it will give you an idea, like, the poor run of form that they've been on. So many points have been dropped on the road, and Brentford have the second best home record just after Liverpool, so this can be a really stiff test. Just looking at the team that he has gone with, it seems
it's a different Brentford though. I thought, I didn't actually know they had the best home record. They've lost the last 3 home matches, and including it getting, I was going to say tonked by Plymouth, but an upset against Plymouth, albeit in a weakened side, but not a good place at the moment.
No, they're not, and they've maybe stepped off it a bit, but you do expect that Thomas Frank's side, like, he made a lot of changes for that Plymouth game. They'll be back to more of their normal self, and they're always well set up and structured and difficult to break down. And you feel that's where City have maybe struggled in recent months, is actually breaking teams down, and then on transition when they lose possession of the ball, getting caught out. And you could see somebody like Brian and Bueno causing them a lot of problems tonight. So we're still waiting to see where Man City are at. I feel like they've turned a little bit of a corner. They probably need a result like a Brentford away to kind of just increase the confidence throughout the squad, and maybe Haaland getting on the score sheet. But there's still a real fragility, and there's weaknesses, particularly in that middle of the park and within their back four.
Yeah, I did say make it four wins from four. They've had opportunities this evening in London. Mark, just on Manchester City, we talked about perhaps the distractions of the off-field charges and so on, but now it's just Kyle Walker, where he's going to end up, and just there are still external factors that might creep into Manchester City.
No Walker in the squad tonight, by the way.
Not in the squad at all.
Not in the squad.
Okay, well, that would signal that he is on the way out, I suppose, Mark.
Yeah, and you know, Pep Guardiola's been in the paper with his personal life as well, you know, this week. So there have been, I suppose, circumstances that sort of outside of football that have impacted. I still feel like the injury to Rodri was kind of the moment that really derailed City. And I think had he been playing throughout all of this, maybe some of the other kind of issues just wouldn't have been brought to light. But I found it very interesting that Pep Guardiola admitted in his press conference this week that he got it wrong in terms of not strengthening the squad in the summer. He felt that they were capable of going one more year, and clearly they're not. You know, where Kyle Walker ends up, it sounds like he'll be sort of moving to Italy. AC Milan have been sort of strongly linked. I think that would suit him down to the ground. His athleticism that was so often the strength has been found out, I think, at the very highest level in the Premier League this season. But, you know, Milan are playing tonight in Serie A, and Emerson Royale is the current right back there. So you would think that if Kyle Walker does go, he'd be able to kind of become the right back for Milan and would be an upgrade on what they've got. And he probably needs a change. And I've mentioned sort of Guardiola's sort of personal life. I mean, Walker, his personal life has been sort of dragged around the media for what feels like a couple of years now. So I think getting away from England is definitely not a bad thing, really, for Kyle Walker.
Ruby, just before we move on to other topics, Graham Potter, of course, is West Ham manager this evening at home to Fulham, home debut for Potter as well. From an Irish point of view, just briefly, Paul, before we move on to transfer news, Chelsea playing Bournemouth, and there's a Bournemouth keeper involved, and it is Mark Travers.
Yeah, Mark Travers starts, and that is due to the fact that Kepa Arrizabalaga is on loan from Chelsea, so a good opportunity for Mark Travers to come in and do well. Chelsea have made a couple of changes there, Shane. Lavia is back in, Jackson top end of the pitch. Chelsea need a win. They've struggled in recent weeks against teams that you would expect them to beat. They need to get back to winning ways, and tonight at home to Bournemouth has to be that fixture.
Maresca was right, Mark Langdon, a few weeks ago. He said Chelsea were not Premier League contenders.
Yeah, he did. I'm sure he would have loved to have been proven wrong in those games where they dropped points. I think Chelsea, this is not just when Maresca was in charge. I felt it against Pochettino. Actually, when sort of teams came at Chelsea, they were you know, able to hit them on the break and you know, enjoyed playing that type of football. In more recent games, when they've been expected to win, they've sort of struggled to do that. And that was the same under Poch as well. So definitely kind of the next step, I think, for Chelsea's progression. They're heading in the right direction. I still think it's been a good season for them so far. But they do need to find a way that now they're getting more and more respect. They need to find ways to open up opponents that is not just Cole Palmer. I think he is often carrying that part of the team, and they just need to find other avenues, really, to open teams up.
Paul, in transfer news, Villa have signed Dortmund player Daniele Malin for £19 million. Do you know much about him?
Yeah, he featured quite prominently, didn't he, in the Euros for Holland, and he seemed to form quite a good part of their attacking threat. Cody Gakpo, obviously, on one win and himself on the other, and he contributed to a couple of goals. But I can understand why they've done that. Hasn't really happened for Bailey this season. Diaby, they lost him at the end of the season. They probably just need to add to wide areas, and he seems like a good fit. He's only 25 years of age, Ruby, perfect profile, and obviously coming from Borussia Dortmund, where he's had a really good stint.
Just to mention on Dortmund, it's all going wrong for them since Malin's left. 3-0 down at half time, the second from bottom, Holsten Kiel, as I'm sure we're all familiar with. There you go, Ruby.
Just down the road from Berlin, I think. What about Arsenal? Will they have to sign a replacement, Mark, for Jesus, who's going to undergo surgery for an ACL injury? That's him out for the season, you would think.
I think that most Arsenal fans would have wanted Arsenal to have signed another forward even before Jesus' injury. You know, Saka's obviously out at the moment. Nweri's also missing. Does leave them light, particularly as Raheem Sterling hasn't been fantastic since he signed on loan. The problem they're going to have, I think, Arsenal, is finding somebody that they think is good enough, really, at this late stage to sort of sustain the title bid. I think it's much easier when you're kind of fighting relegation. You can look at maybe the loan market and you can identify kind of, I don't know, players that have just lost their way a bit that can improve a team. But if you actually go through a lot of European squads, I mean, there won't be that many players that sort of Arsenal would want, that other teams would want to get rid of. The one name I would throw out there just as it would be Rashford, who clearly isn't wanted at Manchester United at the moment. I'm not saying he's perfect for Arsenal, but it might suit both teams, mightn't it, at this stage?
Paul Curry, briefly, would you agree?
I could see him adding something to Arsenal, but I think Arsenal's problem, Shane, is that number nine. Somebody's going to probably play central and be that sort of fox in the box character. I don't see Rashford as that player. He's probably somebody who likes to start from wide areas and drift in. Somebody probably in the mould like a Martinelli would like to do so for Arsenal. So it might paper over a couple of cracks. It's certainly not the solution to that number nine. And I agree with Mark. Like, are they going to get anybody in this window? I don't think so. We said at the beginning of the season it was always going to come back to this conversation that didn't have an out and out number nine. And where do you find one? I mean, there's a lot of clubs looking. They're in very short supply.
Okay. Alan Colley, I hope you're listening. The two lads have just told you Arsenal are not going to win the league.
Time will tell. Mark Langdon, thank you very much. Paul, you're going to stick around and we're going to chat team news when we have all of the teams in for this evening's Premier League games. But up after the break, we have an interview with Davy Fitzgerald, the Antrim hurling boss that we recorded a little bit earlier on this afternoon.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, last weekend marked the return of Ireland's Fittest Family. The show airs Saturday evenings on RTE One and the RTE Player. And with thanks to their lead sponsor, Londis, I'm delighted to say co-creator of the show and current Antrim senior hurling manager, Davy Fitzgerald, joins us here on Game On. Davy, thanks so much for taking the time to chat. As I mentioned, Antrim boss now. So how's the relatively new role going now? We're back in pre-season, edging closer to the league.
Yeah, it's gone grand. Sure. Small little spin up the road. We can handy day's work for you there, just tipping up that, getting up the M1 there in Belfast and outside it, enjoying it. The lads are a great bunch of guys, so they are. We've maybe gone after three or four aspects of our play that we're trying to change, and that's probably going to take a small bit of time that we're going to try and do. Naturally enough, when you're trying to change stuff, you'll probably be a bit slower doing things because you have to think about it, and when you have to think about it, just it's not coming as natural as it should be, but I think it's very important that we go after these few areas and try and nail them down. So that'll take a bit of time, but the lads are very receptive. They're working hard, and you know what? I'm enjoying it. I think the big thing for us is just in year one, if we can stay in the division we're in the league and stay in Lee McCarthy, if we can do that, consolidate year one, I'd be very hopeful that we'll make that bit of progress and things will come a lot more natural after that.
You say small aspects in a few small areas.
Yeah.
What exactly are they?
I don't really want to be going into that, Ruby, because I'll be telling fucking everyone else.
Is that an obvious question?
I'll give you one, right? So yeah. One is breaking ball and puckouts are absolutely horrendous. When I did their stats on breaking balls and puckouts in general, it wasn't good. I think their one rate, as far as I can remember for what we've done, was under 20% of our own puckouts we were winning, long ones. So the way we were approaching the break was terrible. So it goes down on top of the wing back, wing forward. We weren't getting to the pitch of the breaks the way we should be. So it's taken us a bit of work to do that. And also we're working on a lot of different short ones that we can try and get possession, hold possession, and try and get an outcome out of them. It's a big thing with me is, if you take a championship game of hurling, there's probably 100 to 110 dead balls in the game of hurling, right? So you've puck outs probably 40 either side, which is 80. You'll more than likely have 20, 25 frees and 5 or 6 sidelines, right? So you have to make the best of them dead balls as you possibly can. I think last year at Waterford, we were hitting between 8 and 10 points a game on our puck outs. So we were trying to curb the opposition and their puck out. So we were working hard. We weren't 100 miles away from it. So it's like set plays, I suppose. In this side of it, we're just trying to make sure that the dead balls are out there, that we're making the best we can of them. So that requires a lot of work, Ruby. Like that means that we've really got to tighten up in that area alone. The other facets of play are fine. Like, they're there that we got to work on, but that's one big area that we're going to try and concentrate on, but it takes time.
Of course it'll take time, but they all seem to be tactical decisions. You must be happy with the basic skill set and with the players you have.
No, the skill set is definitely fine. Like, if you look at their club performances, normally they're not too far away. Club like Cushendall, Dunleigh, the last few years, Lochiel have won their All-Ireland club. So they did probably 10 or 12 years ago now. But they're always there. They're both club-wise, right? So what we've got to try and do is consolidate that, but bring it. County level is a small bit higher standard. But I think maybe in Antrim for a number of years, they were very focused on club rather than county. I think that was a big thing. So we've got to get that right now. It's what we're trying to do is get everyone in there.
That means building relationships between players from different clubs and getting the clubs to buy into it too. Has that been much of a challenge?
Well, it hasn't yet. I have most of the players in around me. That's fine. Like, we were away the weekend there and we worked really hard for a lot of it, right? And then we had a bit of downtime, like we went go-karting the other night. We went out and had a dinner, a few drinks, had a bit of a sing-song. And, like, I have to say the atmosphere was incredible. It was really good, like, you know. And I remember we finished up, like, we didn't stay all night. I think it was 11:30 we finished. And in fairness, the boys back into the bus and go again. But the atmosphere felt really good there. And I think you have to have that balance in county hurling now. I know it's 2 weeks for the league, but I don't think it was any harm going out and having a few drinks and having the crack as well. But we had worked really hard that weekend on other aspects of our play as well.
There's a wry smile on your face there. It looks like you enjoyed it. This is radio. No one can see that. But I'm just getting the expression from your body language that it was an enjoyable weekend that you think is going to be a benefit.
Yeah, I do. Like, I probably can't go into all the detail. The crack was actually really good, right? And I just laughing, like, because we ended up in my local pub in Six Mile Bridge. So it are the Greyhound Bar, Gleason's. And I would have grown up probably only 10 or 15 yards up the road from there. And we had a room there. And you know what? Like, it was like they let themselves go. They sang. And I like the fact that you can just go out and sing and have the crack and have a few pints as well. And like, there was a few of my family down around as well. And it just felt good, like, you know, even though we've been working really, really hard, it was nice to have them few hours where you weren't having to think about hurling or think about we have to do this or that. And you have to enjoy that part of it as well.
It can't be all work. There has to be play to go with it. What about yourself, though? What about the commute? You joked there at the top of this interview that only a short jaunt up the M1. That's when you get to the M1.
You have a bit of trekking before that. I have two lads that travel with me. I meet Pat Bennett there. He's father to Stephen, Shane and Kieran there to play for Waterford. He's with me coming up. And I have another fellow, Michael Collins. This fellow is in his mid-80s. And he was actually, guys, he was the Clare kitman when I was playing early 2000s. He was with Clare. And then when I was manager of Clare, he was with me. Came to Wexford with me, came to Waterford with me, and at their great age of 86, he's still travelling with me. He's a bit of work to do on his left-hand side, so he does, but we'll get that sorted still. But I have them in the car with me, and you know what? The crack is, you don't feel the journey most of the time. The crack is actually brilliant on the way up.
How many times a week are you going up?
It varies, Ruby, right? You'll definitely go up on a Tuesday, down on a Tuesday. You'll definitely go up on a Friday. Sometimes I'll go up Friday and stay till Sunday. Sometimes I'll go up Friday, down Friday. And then I might have another trip or two where I might have to go and meet lads in Dublin or stuff like that. Like, you'll be on the road, probably definitely involved in Antrim maybe 4 or 5 days a week, easily.
What was the draw to you to commute like that with all you've done in Ireland?
I'm going to be very straight with you. Like, when I finished at Waterford and people say, you were never going to finish, I was done and dusted. I was happy. And then I got a call from a good friend of mine, won't mention his name, But when I probably was under pressure business-wise and when times were tough a number of years ago, this guy would have been there for me in a big way, helped me out massively. And I've been going up north since probably, I think we won the club final 95, 96. And Dunlion Bises is up later that year. And the relationships and the bond that I formed up there, I've been probably going up most years since, be it training a team or going up to them up there or whatever, you know. And that, along with my friend, who was really good to me when times are tough, and he saying to me, you always promised me you'd give me a year or two. He said, now will be a good time. And that's really put me where I am, being honest about them. I do love their passion up there. It's great, but they're probably the reasons I ended up with Antrim.
Are you enjoying the challenge?
Yeah, so Antrim, I think Darren Gleeson did a phenomenal job with Antrim. He brought him to another level. I know they've been up and down from Joe McDonagh to Lee McCarthy a lot of the time. It is a challenge. What I'd like to do is, if we could, over the next 2 or 3 years, is get them in. If there was any way we could get them into that top six, if you get into the top six, you're in with a chance. You will get a chance to compete and win the finals, and you'd never know what might happen. And if that could happen, it would be absolutely incredible. And you know yourself, it's like maybe when you're riding a horse out of coming from no place and you get there, it's an incredible feeling, and you always have that in your head that you'd never know this might happen. And I suppose what does it for me is there's been times over the last maybe 10 or 15 years when you look at it and you do something that you're not meant to do, and you see people's faces and see what you can do to a county or a club that haven't experienced the big days. And if you can get one or two of them really big ones, you can't buy that. The cups are great and the medals, but Jesus, when you do something that you're not meant to do, when you can turn things on their head. And I suppose that little thing is still inside me. I'd just love to get one more of them days, another one.
Sounds like that fire is still burning. You want to prove people that you can do extraordinary things.
You know the story yourself, that doesn't leave. No. You know, I'm sure you have finished yourself, but there's different times and different things. That thing doesn't leave. I'd be fairly certain. You could probably resonate with that yourself. It doesn't leave you, no matter what. I think if it's there, it's there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would agree with that. Is there a big disadvantage for the counties who aren't playing Munster hurling? I mean, I'm only a football county looking in, and you see the competitive nature week in, week out of the Munster Championship. Do those teams have an edge because of that competition that you're going to struggle to get with Antrim?
I don't know whether they have an edge. But the Munster Championship, really, lads, is it's pretty. The Munster Championship is like an All Ireland every week. It's absolutely bonkers. It's incredible. I've been involved in Leinster as well, and I think that's pretty competitive. You look at Galway, Kilkenny, Dublin were there last year, weren't 100 miles off, but Wexford, I won it with them a few years ago. They can match any, they can beat Kilkenny or Galway, and they're no problem as well. They're there, and if we can come to the scene, Offaly are coming to the scene. I think Leinster over the next few years is going to be really competitive. I think you're going to see Leinster really coming there in the next 2 or 3 years. At the moment, yeah, Munster is definitely a nice bit ahead as regards the competitiveness and what it's like. Sometimes you wonder, does it knock a lot out of you when you're flat to the mat all the time and you're trying to keep that consistency going? Can you keep it going even after Munster? But I suppose Limerick have proven that the last few years. Clare came again. When is the last time we had a Leinster winner? Are you looking back to probably Galway? I think in, was it 2017 or 18, was it? I believe Leinster are going to get stronger. I really believe that. But at the moment, you're right. Munster has that advantage because the games are absolutely crazy, you know?
For a sport of hurling, a strong Leinster Championship would be incredible, be it that you have Antrim and Galway involved. But hurling almost needs Leinster to get strong again, does it?
It has to. It has to. But I do think that potential is there. I really do. Having Antrim and the likes of Galway in Leinster Championship is good for us. I really believe it is. Kilkenny, Wexford, they'll say strong. Dublin are definitely coming there. And if you can throw, the Galway and Antrim with it, that's a serious championship. So it is. So I honestly believe the next few years will be interesting.
That somewhat ties into to Willie Maher being recently appointed head of hurling as well, Davey. Like, are there any areas that, that you feel need to be addressed as a priority for Willie?
Like, so the group I'd actually worry about, like, say, you take the strong counties in Munster, they're okay. So they are, I think, the three or four counties, the top three or four in Leinster are okay. It's that bracket underneath we need to bring forward. We need to concentrate on, we need to promote a bit more. Me, honestly, I think that's where Willie's got to focus on. And he's got to focus on how many coaches we've gone into schools, how many club teams we have. Do club teams need more help on the ground? I think that middle bracket needs a good bit of help for definite. Like, if we can bring that middle bracket forward, it means that our top line is going to be better again. I think that's massively important, Harlan.
Have you had any conversations with Willie? Because you're in an interesting position, say, given all you've achieved in your playing managerial career now with Antrim, who, with respect, would be on the lower tier in kind of the broader picture of hurling.
Listen, I haven't. Like, I've come across Willie managing. He's a really smart guy, really good guy. I think he'll get the picture. I think he'll know for hurling to grow. I think he'll have an idea where he needs to go to and to help. Like, hurling will grow if we can get that middle tier to the next level and if we can get them clubs to the next level. And I think he will. I haven't had any chats. The only time Croke Park will look and talk to me is they're going to suspend me. That'd be about it. Other than that, they probably don't speak to me too much. But it's funny, I would talk to a lot of clubs probably on the outside when they come to planning and doing stuff. I love sitting down with them and seeing what they have in their head and what they're thinking and all that. And from their underage up, I love being involved in that kind of stuff in developing players, because you get a great kick out of that.
So obviously the league is around the corner and you want to consolidate your position in the league. Does that mean you have to hit the ground running, or are you looking at this strategically thinking, Nick, get a point there, 2 points there? Have you worked it out, or are you just going
to... I'll be honest with you. Like, the first year, I have to stay in this league. Like, you look at it, Ruby, you have Dublin, Watford. Then you have Carlo, Offaly, Leash, ourselves, like, Westmeath. Like, so there's Westmeath beat Antrim last year in the league, right? Leash, I can remember being in the game, I think it was 2 years ago, that they beat him down in Port Leash. So they are Dublin. I don't think Antrim have beaten them since 2010. Like, there's a number of teams there that we seem to be on par with at the moment. And while we're changing what we're changing, if we could nick points here and there, like, if I can manage to stay there, stay in the Leinster Championship, I'd please God, then within the next year or two, I'd be hoping that we'll make that progress that might be able to elevate us a bit higher. But it's going to be tough, like, with them teams.
This sounds like the conversation you're having in the car going up and down the road every week.
So Ruby, you know, from being in, like, in different things, you're weighing up every situation under the sun. I'm trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to do to hang in there? It's going to take us, like, I can't come in and just change everything in 2 months. Like, it doesn't work like that. You need a small bit of time, but I've got to survive. Like, I don't want to be going down. I don't want to be going down to Joe McDonough. I don't want to be going down another division in the league. So my objective straight now is to try and maintain, if I can, that status. And then let's try and grow it. Like, I'm not there then for the next year or two just for the crack. I want to give ourselves a chance. But I think when you're changing different things, you'll need that small bit of time, so you will, you know. And that's the plan. You don't, you know yourself, you don't stop thinking. Like, you're thinking so much that's unreal about every scenario under the sun. Like, it consumes you.
Davey, can I just pick you up on you mentioned earlier that the fire in the belly never gone out when you were chatting to Ruby, and I know I'm in the presence of two elite athletes here and I'm just a mere journalist, but can you clarify, friend of the show Neil McManus confirmed as a performance coach in your backroom team, have the persuasive conversations in Six Mile Bridge pubs gone about possibly a player role?
Well, firstly, you mentioned there about myself and Ruby being athletes. I probably agree with the Ruby one about myself. I'd never have called myself an athlete anyway. Get the best out of myself. As regards Neil,
I didn't have to move too fast either.
So you needed to be unreal fit of what you were doing, boy. You needed some resilience there. You to always be watching everything, see that weight wise, everything. You had to be, you wouldn't be able to go up and top and have so many rides in a day unless you were in some shape. I'd go out for an hour, 70 minutes. I did train hard, but I'd also accept that the work you did, Ruby, was off the charts. Like, so it was...
That's what it's about.
That's the thing. As regards Neil, like, Neil is head of sports performance, and the work he's put in is incredible. Did I ask Neil to go back playing? I did. Especially, I remember after the Stockneil game, I rang him about 2 days afterwards, and I said, you know what I'm on about? He said, I do. I said, think about it. And he said, I will. So he came back probably 10 days later, and he's humming. Like, he did think about it and was half tempted to go back, but he decided not to. And he told me the reasons, and that'll be between the two of us. And he's not going to play for Antrim, so he's not this year, but he is working hard with us off the field and in other stuff. And Neil McManus is the type of guy who will go to the end of the earth to be the best he can be at whatever he does. And even the stuff he's done with us lads, he's done some great stuff. Like, this is his first time doing a role like this. But does he go and meet people, talk to them? Does he come up with different ideas? He does. And he's a great guy to have around. I'll tell you, one of the reasons I brought Neil on with me is I came across Neil in a game or two when Wexford played Antrim in a few challenge games. And to say Neil McManus wouldn't back down would be an understatement. He'd cut you in two, boy. He was so passionate about what he did, and he would do whatever it takes to win. And I loved that. And I said that to him. I said, I remember one day having words with him. I was Wexford manager, and he was we had words. But, you know, I walked away after the game, and I said, I love that guy in my side, you know. So I'm delighted to have him on board. And I wouldn't have minded if he was a player either.
Do you enjoy that stubbornness in a fellow opponent, I suppose?
Commitment.
Yeah. Commitment. Bloody-mindedness.
But that's, like, you have to have that. You have to have that drive. Yeah, like, a lot of these guys that are like that, they'll be seriously driven. Probably a small bit selfish. We can all be when we're that driven. We'll be absolutely doing anything we can, or any player to get to the top of where they can get to. Like, that, them type of players are them fellas that will go through the wall for you. That will do anything. Like, when you know you're probably going to get hurt in a tackle. Like, them fellas, they're the fellas you need going into battle. Like, when I'm picking teams, it's normally balance I look for. You'll have the most unbelievable, skillful lad. You'll have the lad then that will go into everything. Then you'll have the lad whose head is unbelievable, can think his way around situations. And it's to get that balance right in the team is the big thing for me.
How's it going in Antrim?
I'm trying hard. I'm figuring that out at the moment. Like, the thing when you get a bunch like I have is to try and figure out personalities. Okay, who sees it this way? What's their strengths? What's their weaknesses? What kind of personalities have they? And there's a lot of work into figuring that out. Like, is everyone's character and what they're actually like, and their skill set in on top of that as well. And to figure that out, I'm in the process. But it just won't come to you in a month or two. Like, that takes maybe 2, 3, 4 months for me to get a real picture of exactly what's going on inside every fella's head and what the story is. Like, when you come to the heat of the battle and the pressure is on and things are on the line, how fellas react is important. And then to make sure I put them in the right places. Like, there's certain positions in the field that you need an awful lot of, as regards thinking, be able to think in your feet and move and do different things. There's certain other places then you'll have a primary focus to do maybe one or two things in that. And it's very important that you put people in the right places if you can.
It's all about reactions. How to react. Who reacts the quickest?
Yep, that's for sure.
Simple as that. Davey Fitz, thank you so much for your time, and safe travelling for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much, lads. Have a good one, okay? Take care.
Game on.
Hurling.
Game on.
Football.
A thoroughly enjoyable chat with Davey Fitzgerald there, Ruby. You got on like a house on fire.
Yeah, I find him really interesting. I mean, that much passion and desire, like, to drive from one end of the country to the other.
Look, fair play to him. All the best. I do hope Leinster Hurling picks up, though. I do agree with him. Mm. Like, you watch the Munster Championship, you almost feel jealous living in Leinster.
Very much so. Committed to the cause. A man is also committed to the cause. Paul Curry has stuck around for some team news ahead of this evening's Premier League fixtures. Paul, what have you got for us?
Well, I guess Liverpool, no real surprise. It's a full-strength team, Shane. I mentioned earlier, like, the majority of those players have had 7 days off, so no major surprises. Nathan Collins starts for Brentford. We mentioned
Mark Travers for Bournemouth.
No major surprises across the sides. I'm going to go for the three top teams to win tonight. I think City, Chelsea and Liverpool will get through with 3 points. You can hold me to that next week when I'm in next week.
Oh, don't you worry, me.
West Ham, Fulham.
I don't.
Graham Potter.
I'll go draw.
Draw, sitting on the fence. Yeah, he's going draw.
I'm going Bournemouth and Forest.
Bournemouth, Forest. Can Forest do the double over Liverpool?
Yeah.
Big call from Ruby Walsh on that bombshell. Ruby Walsh, thank you very much for your company this evening.
Cheers, Shane. Pleasure. Enjoy the road back to Kilkenny.
Paul Curry, thank you very much. For listeners who haven't tuned in, listen to the start of the show on the podcast. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Lorley Davis working on this evening's show for myself, and Ruby Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. Bene De Silva is up next with the National, not the National Chart Show. It's not a Friday. I've lost the run of myself.
I thought you were going to say the National Anthem.
He's got the new music show, and I hope the National Anthem is on because otherwise it's changed. New music show, Bennett Silva up next. Game On's back at 6 tomorrow. We're taking an ad break, then checking in with the news desk. Good luck.